This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to The State of Health, the podcast where patients put healthcare decision makers and thought leaders in the hot seat. I'm Gunnar Esiason. Today's show carries on the antibiotic resistance series. So far, you've heard from a patient advocate about living with an antibiotic resistant infection, politicians who are trying to fix the market disincentives at the heart of the crisis, and an investor putting money into companies with the hope that policymakers can make antibiotic development sustainable. Past episodes in the antibiotic resistance series are already in your feed. Today, we head to the cutting edge to learn about emerging antibacterial technologies getting developed in academic labs with the hope that patients can access new options soon. Dr. Ben Chan is a bacteriophage researcher in the Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at Yale University, the laboratory of Professor Paul Turner. His research focuses on the development and creation of virulence-targeting antibiotics and resistance-targeting antibiotics for the treatment of bacterial infections refractory to traditional antibiotic therapy. Also joining us today is Ella Balassa, a patient advocate, consultant, and person living with cystic fibrosis who advocates for the development of novel therapies for the treatment of antibiotic-resistant infections, including phage therapy. We're going to learn how a chance meeting led to Ella being one of the first American cystic fibrosis patients to dose phage therapy as a treatment for her antibiotic-resistant infection and what it means for the future of phage therapy in the United States. Let's talk about the state of phage therapy. All right, Ella and Ben, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, of course. I'd love to know, how did you guys meet initially?
Well, I guess I can start. It was by coincidence and by chance that I was actually contacted by, so I do some writing as part of my advocacy work. And I was contacted by a company that was doing a documentary on a patient that was receiving phage therapy in Texas. And so they asked if I might write a synopsis of what living with CF was like to accompany this piece. And so they sent me the video right before it was published. And I viewed it and I was mind blown because I have a science background, so I had heard of phage, but never knew it to be something that was actually viable, that somebody with CF was actually being treated with it. And by that point, I had been dealing with pretty resistant infections for a number of years, already trying to find alternatives. Of course, there has been nothing but traditional antibiotics. And so I immediately reached out to Ben after I saw his name in the video and asked if this was something that I could partake in and possibly try.
Ben, I've got to know from your end, was that unique to be just contacted out of the blue by patients?
No, happens like a lot, like today even, like twice. Yeah, happens all the time and it's great and it was cool. I had to look up the date. It was November 26, 2018, that we sort of met digitally. And then I guess in January, was it when we met in person?
Yeah, it was mid-January is when I actually received treatment. But in that time, you know, we were communicating quite a bit about, you know, how the logistics of how it would happen, you know, sending sputum cultures to you to analyze, to find phage, and then also for me as a patient to understand more about what I was delving into, what I was going to be doing.
Mm-hmm. So Ella, I want to hear from your end. I've already described it to some of my guests on the show. And we, of course, Emma was on the podcast a couple weeks ago and she also described it, but what does it mean to be living with a highly resistant infection?
Yeah, it is. It's very scary and it's very frustrating because and you know this yourself too, Gunnar, that we try to do everything we can for our health, keeping up with every breathing treatment, trying to exercise, do it all, but it sometimes it's just still not enough. And these infections just take hold and cannot be stopped. And for a long time, you know, I was getting antibiotic treatments that were effective. And they were, as soon as I started, you know, an IV course, it would stop the infection in its tracks and then reduce it and then I would be better. But as I was starting to experience these infections that were taking longer to have any effect on, where I was, you know, I was taking antibiotics or intravenous oral antibiotics for up to a week without any difference or really feeling any different, and then they would kick in. And it's scary to realize that your life is so dependent on treatment that isn't working anymore, that who knows what the effect will be in the future, if it's gonna continue to sustain your life. And my whole life bared on that. And it's scary and then also very frustrating, as I said.
Yeah, frustration is a good way to put it. And I've also said that I think like no one ever wants to be in a position where they have to hear from the doctor that they're, quote, running out of options, right? That's a place where no one ever wants to be. But it seems like it's happening. It happens quite frequently for people with CF, unfortunately. That's a tough thing. But it's also importantly happening to people that also don't live with CF. It's more of a generalizable issue. So you talked about meeting Ben, connecting after watching, I have to mention it was the Pages Phages video that you're referring to. I'll link that in the show notes. But you seemed eager to want to try, phage. Did it seem exciting or scary when you initially reached out to Ben?
It seemed exciting, at first because I felt that it was another viable option, that I was finally coming across something else that could help me more than antibiotics had. And after I had some conversations with Ben and understood more about the science of how the phage actually works with my body, how it works with the antibiotics that I also might be receiving at the same time, that synergistic effect. And really, I made the decision. It was a decision that I made for myself. It was not with the advice of my CF physician, actually. He really, in some ways, a little bit discouraged me or really was not really involved in it. You know, I kind of really pursued it myself. And so I said, like, at first, I was very excited. But around that month, that December timeframe, I also got a really bad exacerbation where I was on antibiotics for a number of weeks and I wasn't seeing any improvement. In fact, I was declining. And then it became more of an urgency, more of like a need where the risk was not that significant, where I felt that the benefit to me could really save my life because I was dealing with a resistant infection. I wasn't even resistant to colistin because I was on IV colistin for a number of weeks and was still very, very ill. And so it was at that point more of where I had to try this, where I realized that it was really in some ways a life or death situation. And I felt that it was my only option and I was going to take it.
So let's define some of those terms for some of our non-CF listeners. Colistin, for those of you keeping score at home, is really an antibiotic of last resort, is what it is. And then an exacerbation is a flaring of CF symptoms, in really kind of the long and short of it. Ben, let's turn this to you for a moment. Can you actually tell us what phages are and how do they work? And what's so different about them compared to what we would normally consider an antibiotic?
Sure, I can try anyway. So bacteriophages are the viruses of bacteria, and they can like only infect bacteria and like they're super specific, right? So say you have a Pseudomonas infection, a lot of phages, you know, can infect only a few strains of Pseudomonas aeruginosa, for example. And so they're really host specific, as we say. But they're different than, I guess, what we call traditional antibiotics, and that they, you know, they're a living organism, and they're, I guess, super narrow spectrum, right? So even narrower spectrum than a lot of these narrow spectrum antibiotics. And they kill in sort of a different way than chemical antibiotics, and that they infect the bacteria and they replicate and then they just burst. And then, you know, hundreds of new particles go out to continue the life cycle. So like a self-amplifying and I guess self-limiting in the absence of bacteria drug.
So a phage is a living organism. How is it delivered to a person who's, let's say in this case, inhaling a phage?
Sure. So I guess the living organism part, I guess people are split on because it's, you know, a virus. And so people are two camps, I guess. but assuming they are like living organisms by whatever definition, they're provided to someone that's going to breathe them in just in saline, basically. And then you nebulize them. So you take the 3 milliliters or 2 or 10 or however many milliliters are in the dose, dump it in a nebulizer cup, which is a little, you know, as you guys both know, a way to like aerosolize particles or drugs for inhalation. And so in the cases we've treated for pulmonary infection, it's all been nebulized.
We're going to take a quick break. The State of Health will be right back. So you're not a medical doctor, you're a bench scientist. You know, I want to know from your perspective, why should people care about antibiotic resistance? You know, what makes you show up to work in the morning?
Everyone should be worried about antibiotic resistance, right? It's a big deal. And you know, a lot of people may think, oh, it doesn't affect me now, but it may be true, but it's going to, in a directly or indirectly, in the very near future, especially if you don't continue to develop new drugs. So there's a big urgency there, especially given the fact that it takes years and years and years to get a drug from, you know, concept to clinic. And what gets me going in the day in the lab, it's actually really, to be honest, it's the translational medicine bit. It's interacting with people that this could really benefit, right? So like Ella, for example, I love interacting with people, you know, even just texting, you know, not necessarily lab related. It really gets me going because it's like, this is like an idea that's like, you know, feels way out there, but when you use it therapeutically, it like, I don't know, it does something, you know, and it feels like, oh my God, it's like, this has meaning. It's like, this is why we do it. And so that's really why I do it.
So I want to push on another technical question here that you sort of mentioned. How exactly does phage work when a strain of bacteria is antibiotic resistant? Like, what is the magic sauce that allows it to work?
Sure. So there's a couple of things. The one that really helps is that it's completely different, right? It's a completely different type of antimicrobial. So it for the most part, doesn't matter how antibiotic resistant something is. There's a phage out there for it, right? So it's something that can work completely independently. However, the work we're doing is we're trying to work on ways that we can get the phages and antibiotics to work well together, and obviously with the immune system, and that we are, because, we, you know, as you know, no matter what you throw out there to try and kill bacteria, eventually resistance will happen, right? As we're seeing now with antibiotics, and we will see this with phages. And so what we're doing in the lab is we're, you know, sort of fast forwarding, and we're forcing the bacteria to become resistant to these phages. So we know how they become resistant. And we do it in a way that when the bacteria become resistant, it comes at some cost. For example, it's resensitized to chemical antibiotics, or it's putting out a signal that the immune system can now recognize and kill the bacteria. Or, you know, it may be something that the bacteria needs for virulence, but not for life, right? So the bacteria is like, okay, I was doing this and causing disease, but if I don't have this, I'm still alive. It's just not causing disease.
So maybe if I can, I guess, reiterate what you're talking about, or maybe construct in my own words, you are taking bacterial strains that are maybe resistant to XYZ antibiotic, introducing phage to it, and then flipping the resistance from the antibiotic to the phage so that a patient can then go ahead and use antibiotics again that might be sensitive again.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think it's especially important because a lot of the people we're treating, you know, maybe aren't at our institution, right? And so if they have an exacerbation somewhere, you know, they're off, you know, maybe somewhere that doesn't do phage therapy and they have an exacerbation, it'd be nice if they had tools to use, right? And so a lot of these resensitization just allows opportunity to use some of these old antibiotics.
And so that's kind of what I'm imagining where Ella, where you fit into the puzzle here. You saw this opportunity to sort of really get involved in academic medicine, because again, the things that Ben's cooking up in the lab are really just technologies that hopefully one day will become drugs. Ben, I wanna ask what is the process, right, from turning a technology that is discovered in the lab into a drug? Like where do you fall into this?
Sure. So wow, the whole spectrum, I guess. You know, we find new phages all the time in nature and environment, and then we go through the process of, like, you know, finding the individual phage, characterizing it in the lab, you know, knowing how it's killing the bacteria, knowing what the host range is, so what, you know, percentage of circulating Pseudomonas is it killing, how those Pseudomonas become resistant, how we can benefit clinically from these trade-offs. And so we have that characterized phage. And then, so that's sort of the like bench side stuff. And then we approach the FDA when, you know, if there's a case that needs to be treated, and we present our evidence and justification. And then, you know, they either say yes or no. And if they say yes, we go ahead and treat. So we do the full, like, you know, environment to bench to bedside spectrum of drug development.
Now, Ella, on your side here, you know, my understanding is that your experience with this is like a little different than what we would consider like a randomized clinical trial, right? You knew exactly what you were getting. So talk to me about the process of actually making the trek up to Yale to dose one of these, you know, highly experimental, you know, projects really that Ben was working on in his lab.
Yeah. So I received this treatment through an emergent IND. And it wasn't, I mean, I received it in a clinic setting and I was monitored, as one might happen when, you know, someone was receiving a treatment under a clinical trial, basically signed a form saying there is no liability, that this is all on me if something happens. And, I was really scared. I was like sitting on that table, you know, on the clinic bench thing, and I was sweating profusely. I was definitely nervous. You know, it was something that I was liability was on me. But overall, the process was quite simple. Ben did a lot on his end with communicating with the FDA and having everything set up. And actually, it could have happened at my local CF center here, but my physician would have had to been involved in that process and he wasn't comfortable with that. So that is why I had to go up to Yale to receive treatment in that case.
So I got to know, Ben, was it like a scenario where, you know, I'm imagining like the mad scientist across campus in New Haven, you know, for anyone who's ever been to Yale or been to New Haven, they know that, you know, the colleges are sort of on one part of the town, and the hospitals in the other part of town. I'm imagining you, I don't know why, riding a bike with a biohazard box from the lab to the hospital. Am I characterizing the actual experience that way, or is it a little bit more mundane in the way it actually worked out?
you're pretty close, actually. It's because it was January. That's why I wasn't biking. But yeah, basically I just carried the box of foam cooler across campus. Otherwise I would have been on a bike. I guess I'm a stereotype of some kind. But yeah, that's how it was. And also, Ella, sorry about the terror of the informed consent document. I didn't really have any involvement in the way those things are written, but like when you read them, you're like, oh my God, like I guess if you do that for any drug, you like read the possible side effects, it's like, you might die, all your hair might fall out. You're like, what? This is just like an antibiotic for a wound or something. But like, there's a whole list of things. It's like, well, maybe in some weird scenario, this will happen. So totally get that, sorry about that. I didn't write it though.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I've been in a number of clinical trials myself. This sounds very different than anything I've ever done, and it certainly I think requires a lot of courage. I think for patients to be the first Definitely. To go through this. Back to you, Ella. You kind of talked a little bit about you're sweating profusely sitting there on the gurney. Did you have a fear about trying a drug that the FDA was, I guess, interested enough in to allow it to go forward, but it clearly wasn't authorized, for broad right. use.
Well, as I kind of mentioned before, at that point in my, at the point in January when I received phage, I was already very, very ill with that infection that I was battling. And I felt that I was not going to get better if I didn't try it because of the resistance that I was facing with that infection. And so, yes, it was very terrifying in that I also didn't know whether, taking phage might just exacerbate, might make my condition even worse, where I wasn't near my CF care center. I was at a hospital I'd never been treated at. And it was a very trying time for me too. I was staying in a hotel room, with my mom, and I was doing breathing treatments every few hours. And the day that I was in the clinic was quite long. It was filmed by the Associated Press. So we did like interviews at the beginning, and then went into the clinic to do the treatment. And then I had to stay there for a while afterward to make sure I didn't have an adverse reaction to it. And then I received another few doses for actually a whole week while I was up there. So it was an extended time, but it was worth it.
And not to mention New Haven in January, not the most forgiving place in the world. The state of health. We'll be right back. Ben, where do phages go from here? What is the next step for them? Before we do end the show, I need to, we're all hanging on the edge of our chairs to hear about the outcome. But before we get there, for Ella, where do phages go from here? And what needs to happen to translate this academic work into something for people more broadly?
Sure. So phages go, I guess, everywhere from here, right? First, though, we've got to get clinical trial. Right. So, I mean, like these single cases are like great. And I think they're very, very important. But we got to get through like a, randomized blind controlled clinical trial. And then once we're through that, then I think, we can go anywhere, assuming the outcome is encouraging from that trial. But we really need to do this right. We need to find out, if these phages are doing what we think they're doing, how well they're doing it, and if there's a real chance that they could be used clinically. And then if we can see that that's, beyond a reasonable doubt or whatever the case, then we go all out and really make this a more normal part of treatment.
And so Ella, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to quickly add that there are also the barriers of a lack of investment and, policy barriers too, that are, in some ways preventing novel treatments from being pursued, funded, and moving into those clinical trial phases. And then also just a general lack of public awareness of phage therapy, of novel treatments, of even antibiotic resistance, of course, as this whole series focuses on. So I think there's a lot of other pieces too that all fit together and really have to be in unison to bring phages forward and other novel treatments.
Yeah, I think you make a good point there that sort of like the whole impending antibiotic crisis, or like the post-antibiotic world that, you hear people talk about, is really like a calamity of errors, right? Like, so like one little piece of the puzzle, keeps going wrong, which snowballs and snowballs and snowballs from, policy errors to reimbursement risk to prescribing issues in the hospital. You know, all these things are sort of compounded together to create a scenario where even getting in clinical trials is a hard thing, right? You know, clinical trials aren't, they aren't cheap. They aren't easy to do. They're complex. They're, speaking of living organisms, they're almost like living organisms themselves. There's a lot that goes into the process of actually translating an academic technology into a therapeutic. But for the sake of listeners, we have to know, what was the outcome of the one-off phage trial, the N of one trial that you went through back in January of 2018 or 2019? When was it?
Yeah, 2019, January of 19. Well, it was a success. I was then, my case was used as a case study by Ben and other researchers. And actually, funny story, when I was at NACFC, there was another researcher that I met there, a phage researcher who had read about my case, knew all about it, had worked with you know, my data. And so it was really cool that I was able to have that effect on the development, you know, on the advancement of phage research. And so it's advanced so rapidly in just these last couple of years. But as far as my case, I was able to, shortly after I received phage for that week at a time, a week, I was able to clear that acute infection within a number of days afterward. So it was a success for me, and I would 100% do it again, and would love the opportunity to do so, because, you know, we all still battle these resistant infections despite being on some of these modulator therapies that have helped our lives in many ways. You know, these are chronic infections that we continue to need treatment for.
I'm glad that worked out for you. And it certainly sounds like there's something cooking in Ben's lab that might hopefully be applied more broadly. And my one regret is that Ben didn't have to drive his bike across campus with the styrofoam box. I think that's my one regret in this whole story. But otherwise, this is certainly a good case study worth looking at. Because it's different than the classic chemical antibiotic, right? It's different from what you know, people consider antibacterial agents that they would pick up from the pharmacy. And I think it's an example of what is going on out there, sort of under, you know, not necessarily under the radar, but, you know, under the surface of some of these more broad policy battles that are happening in Washington to sort of correct this market. And it's certainly encouraging, to say the least. So Ben and Ella, thanks for coming on the show. This was really great.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Appreciate
it.
Big fan of Building Things with Gunner on Instagram, by the way.
yeah. Check out my Instagram if you want to see me DIY things on the weekends. But thanks for coming on, and we will hopefully get you back on here again soon.
Yeah, totally. Thanks.
Thanks.
That's all for this week. Be sure to join us next week. New episodes come out every Wednesday morning wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at G17Esiason, and you can check out my website at gunneresiason.com. The antibiotic resistance series continues next week. If you liked what you heard today, be sure to subscribe to The State of Health and then leave a rating and a review. A big thank you to Dr. Ben Chan and Ella Velasa for today's episode. The State of Health is produced by Bob Dwyer. Thanks to Odyssey for making this podcast possible. We'll see you next week.